There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
I'm one of the many photographers that National Geographic Expedition uses, which is an independent company but associated with the society.
Okay.
And we are pretty much like the photo instructors, photo mentors that go with travelers to various locations in the world. I've done Burma, I've done Japan, you know, Papua New Guinea, places like that. And then we also work with areas that you can go by ship. Like, I think, I'm not sure if they, Japan, National Geographic has a relationship with Lindblad. And so we go to places like Iceland and Greenland and Antarctica and Alaska and all those sort of things. And so on board, they always have one representative of the National Geographic. And so the photo instructor or photo mentor is the representative for the National Geographic on the Lindblad cruises. And it's a very, like a lot of factors involved here.
You're off to Iceland soon again, aren't you?
I'm going to Iceland in the last week of July, right, for okay. on Lindblad, National Geographic.
So you're coming to Dubai. You are coming to do a talk and a workshop themed yes. around helping attendees learn how to tell a story while they take images in the style of National Geographic. I have to share
right.
a secret with you, actually, here. For many years, when I was younger, I wanted to be Steve McCurry. Obviously.
I'm not sure about Steve McCurry, but there's a lot of people who wanted to be a National Geographic photographer, so you're in good company here.
I think so. So it's a very exciting thing personally to speak to you. And I'm wondering if we can start there, actually. How do you learn, first of all, to shoot like a professional photographer rather than somebody with a smartphone? And how do you tell a story in a National Geographic style?
Well, it's interesting. The Geographic is evolving, so the style is evolving. But when I did bulk of my work for National Geographic, the style was just generic. I shouldn't say generic, that's the wrong word, but it's general sort of documentary photojournalism storytelling, which means you have an arc, you know, you have a beginning, middle, and end, and then you also try to have meaning and emotional connection with your story. And the reason why I use the word story is it's not just because I want people to do, you know, 5 or 10 images, but oftentimes with National Geographic as well as with other magazines, even a single image has to have a story within it. There has to be a purpose for that image. It's not just a lovely sunset. You know, there has to be a reason why we are there taking that lovely sunset. And oftentimes there are elements within that photo that will tell you why we're there. And then when you're doing a story with National Geographic, you know, if there's multiple images that are used, then these stories connect with each other, or these images all connect with each other. So the difference between someone who is working for a magazine and on assignment, whether it's National Geographic or Smithsonian or wherever, is that our pictures have to have, or our photos have to have purpose. They have to tell something. It's not just, you know, oh, this is a lovely place I've been to. It is, you know, I'm there because there is a reason to be there.
And how do you make an emotional connection? I mean, that's clearly very important. Do you do that by interacting with subjects? How do you get that emotion across?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. So if you have 20 minutes, I can go through the whole talk with you. But the bottom line is that you pretty much, you know, listen, you show compassion, and you try to be vulnerable with your people. And then you have to observe, because what a lot of people do is they will talk to people, but they're not actually observing.
Right.
So they're not trying to learn anything. They're just there chit-chatting so they can get access, so they can photograph. But if you talk to somebody, you have to watch what they're doing, watch what their facial expressions are, just see, you know, how they're responding even to how you are talking to them, or your presence. In this day and age now, because we have so little time on assignment anymore, oftentimes photographers like myself, we are highly dependent on people like program people, you know, for NGOs or nonprofits, or yeah. we have to depend on translators or what we call fixers. Mm. I'm sure as a radio person you've used those yourself. And we have to depend on those kind of people a lot, because we don't have the time anymore to spend, you know, 6 weeks in a village or whatever. You know, so we need to then be attuned to what they're saying, how people are responding to them, those kind of things. When I go into the field now, I don't have days. I have hours. And sometimes I have minutes to connect. It's not like the old mythology of, you know, we lived in a village for 3 months. Mm. It's like we're running through that place trying to figure out what's going on fairly quickly. So this is why oftentimes, you know, when people are what I call is penny wise, pound foolish. They'll hire, you know, a cheap young photographer, but that photographer doesn't know how to observe or take story. And so they end up, you know, not getting the type of images they need. But if they can hire an experienced photographer, somebody who's been in the field, who understands how to connect with people, then they definitely will get their money's worth in the end. And I find that a lot of these, at times there was a little bit of a problem where we're thinking, oh, we're not getting work anymore. But I'm finding now that a lot of organizations are now wanting to hire more experienced photographers because they're finding that it's making it worthwhile for them to do so.
Karen, can I move on to your books? I don't want to get through the whole of your speech and talk and everything on the radio here. We need to save something, I guess.
Something for the audience, yeah.
You are a Pulitzer Prize nominated author for Impact. Your book, Nurse, told stories of medical professionals in the frontline soldiers in incredibly intense situations. Personally, for you, how much does that take a toll on you? Because it strikes me that it must be very, very difficult, the situations that you have found yourself in.
You know, it is difficult, and it actually took a toll on me more in the beginning than it does now.
Right.
Now it's become part of, I know what's going on, and I don't want to be so arrogant to say it's like being a medical professional. Not at all. I mean, you know, those guys really, people's lives depend on what they do. For me, it's, you know, I'm just there to take a photo. But you sort of do become a little more aware, and you can incorporate what you see. So, you know, people who might be in pain or weeping or whatever, you know that you're there to do a job, and you're not there to break down. When I first started doing this in the 90s, of course, I was a new mother, and I had a baby and all this other kind of stuff. I mean, I felt like I was weeping almost every other day. But, you know, now I feel I'm a little more comfortable in terms of these difficult situations, and comfortable is the wrong word, but maybe I'm just used to it, or maybe I've incorporated it. But yeah, it is a very stressful situation. And what I find fascinating is oftentimes, to me, it's like normal. But when I start to talk about it with people that don't do this, I can see that they become uncomfortable. So it's like they don't want to hear about these kind of situations.
Sure.
And so I have to control myself a lot when I'm in mixed company.
Jimmy Carter, former President Jimmy Carter, wrote introductions for both of those books. And I'm interested in how does that come about? Do you phone him and say, look, I need you to write some stuff? Does he call you? How does that happen?
Yeah, me and Jimmy, best friends for all of 2 seconds. No, that isn't how that happened. What happened was, I mean, Jimmy Carter, of course, has an amazing, he was a better, you know, past president than he was a president, I think, in some ways, but he became a true statesman, and he, you know, has done amazing work in terms of global health. And so with the National Geographic book, the one that Impact from the front lines of global health, Jimmy Carter's lawyer was also the National Geographic's lawyer, and that's how that connection was made.
Okay.
And then, and of course, he saw the book and he saw the information and he really liked what was being done, so he offered to do the intro to the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the nurse book, which is that was done by Emory University, and they paid for it as well as another grant funder paid for this book. And Jimmy Carter's mom, Lillian, was a nurse. And she was also in the Peace Corps, so it was kind of a natural that he would write the introduction to a book, particularly one that Emory was sponsoring, because he's from Georgia, and Emory's one of the premier nursing universities or nursing schools in Georgia.
It's some endorsement, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, really? It was amazing.
So look, you're
quite excited.
You're in Japan at the moment. I'm speaking to you in. You are in. Is it Okura? I think it is.
I am in Kyoto right now.
Oh, you're in Kyoto now, and you're about to lead an expedition. But you are also. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're developing an in-depth environmental project. I wanted to ask you about that. You're also completing a new book. So nothing if not busy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the best thing to do is try to keep yourself busy, whether you get paid for it or not, but to try to be busy with creative projects, definitely.
And what can you tell us about the environmental projects you're working on?
Well, the environmental project is connected. I mean, I can't get into too much detail because we haven't been funded yet, but maybe there's a funder out there who's willing to fund. I want to look at the health effects of fossil fuel development.
Right.
And it came out of several projects that I did. I'm a member of the International League of Conservation Photographers. I'm a senior fellow there. And I had two projects that looked at fossil fuel development in the United States. One was on the issues of fracking and how it affects people's health and also emotional health when you have that shadow of fracking over your family's land or whatever. And then the other story that I did for them was down in Houston when we looked at the impact of air quality created, or the bad air quality created by the refineries down there. And so there's huge numbers of asthma cases, particularly among children and with also some cancer clusters. And the idea is just to look at the fact that, you know, particularly in light of our present-day government, or leader, I should say, in the United States, he's pushing old-style, you know, fossil fuel development, and there's a toll for that. When I was working in Appalachia, black lung was widespread. Why do we want to go back to that?
Mm.
You know, even the wives are having, you know, lung issues because they would wash their husband's clothes and get that dust on their, you know, from the husband's clothes into their lungs. So I'm really wondering why we seem to be, you know, and why our government seems to insist on going back to an old-style, you know, fuel and energy development. And so part of this project is to look at that sort of issue or look at those concerns. Like if you start going back into fossil fuel, which will be, you know, it's an expendable fuel that's not going to last forever, you know, rather than trying to develop new technologies, you're also going to be putting a lot of people's health at risk at the same time. Even though you may create a few little jobs, those jobs aren't going to last for a long time, but their health damage will be long-term. So I always like to look at, for me, what's really important about environment is how the health, making those connections with the communities that live on the land. So the health of these communities are directly related to the health of the land. And a lot of this came from when I worked in Appalachia years ago and worked on anti-strip mining issues, and you could see clearly how the land was being destroyed and people also were getting sick, not just also physically sick, but emotionally sick and spiritually sick. And as we know now, people who are under stress tend to also, you know, their immune system goes down and their health, you know, gets affected by it too. So making that connection between spiritual as well as physical health in connection with the environment.
It's interesting that, because I think a lot of people don't automatically make those connections. And also when you're divorced from the situation by not being in Appalachia, for example, it's something that needs to be highlighted. Let's hope the funding comes in for that. You're coming here to the UAE to share a wealth of experience. You're coming here to speak. I wanted to ask you, though, that's one side of a visit, I guess. I would imagine you'll have a camera or a number of cameras with you. What would you be, have you thought about what you'd like to photograph in the Emirates?
Well, sadly, I don't have the time to photograph anything. They basically have me coming in, I'm like parachuting in, giving my talk, giving my workshop, and then I'm leaving the next day. And so, you know, I think I don't even know enough to even say what I would be interested in, but of course these artificial environments that are being created there, I'm very curious about that and wondering, you know, how those are developing and what that means for people. I'm also very interested in just how people live in these artificial environments. You know, just basically it seems like a very interesting place to visit, and I don't know enough to make any kind of, you know, opinion about it. I would love to know more about it. It seems like a fascinating sort of oasis in the middle of, you know, a dry area. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the other thing that I'm very interested in is water and how do these areas, you know, maintain their water, because that's going to be a key issue, you know, down the road for all of us.
It really is. It's something we've been talking about just recently on this program as well. Final question for you. For your session, it says on the promo material, April the 12th is your talk. Please bring your own phone or camera. Now, in the modern age of the smartphone, we are all photographers. What do you think of camera phones?
I think it's great. I mean, what I don't like is I'm going to backtrack a little bit here.
Okay.
I think it's great. The camera phone is a lot like the old Brownie camera. You know, you have to move your body. You have to be much more aware of how you're composing your images because you don't have zoom lenses, at least, you know, most camera phones don't have zoom lenses. Some do, but they're not actual real zooms.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that you have to really think heavily about composition and lighting and all those sort of things. But the downside of the cell phones or the smart cameras is that I think people are not really experiencing life very much. They want to photograph everything, but they themselves are not experiencing it as opposed to recording it. And I don't know whether that's right or wrong. I mean, it's But when I walk around and I see, like I'm right now in the middle of this amazing cherry blossom season in Kyoto, and just about everyone is doing selfies of themselves with a cherry blossom. And I'm thinking, are you really experiencing this? This is fleeting. Cherry blossoms don't last very long. Are you really experiencing the, you know, the idea of these fragile things coming forward very quickly and then disappearing very quickly? No, I bet you they're not. They're just wanting to get their little selfie, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that what that means. I mean, I wonder about it. I've done, you know, tours down to Antarctica where I've seen travelers who've had literally 7 or 8 GoPros all over their bodies. And I'm thinking, are you really experiencing this amazing adventure of going down to Antarctica, or are you going to live it through your video? You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the answer to that is, but I feel like it's a question we should all be asking, because sometimes it's better to live in the real world rather than the virtual world. And I think right now there's a sort of edge we're about to jump off where, oh, we're going to live in the virtual world. But it's like the science fiction, you know, stories of the past where people just get plugged in and they don't really know what's going on around them because they're just plugged into this virtual world. So I don't know. I mean, it's a little far-fetched from a camera phone, but the idea is with this digital technology, you know, we do need to be aware of what all this means for us. And yet I don't think we're analyzing or assessing well enough what it means to live in the digital world.
Do you know what? Maybe it's for people like you, Karen, to document the real world and to live in it, and we experience it through your images. Maybe that's the point.
Maybe, but I think it's better to experience it yourself.
I think you're probably right, you know. Have you ever taken a selfie, can I ask?
Oh, yeah, I take selfies a lot, but not a lot. Not like these girls and boys that I'm looking out there where they take it like almost every minute of the day. They're out there, I mean, there's selfies everywhere. I'm looking and saying, what's... why are you taking a selfie? You're just next to a wall, you know.
It's validation.
You know, I know. It's like they're collecting selfies, you know. So anyway, whatever, you know. It is what it is. So
the selfie is the New Millennium's baseball card, perhaps. I don't know quite how it works.
I don't
either.
Know. I don't know whether we've just entered this narcissistic society where it's all about us or what. I mean, when I look at the funniest thing is when I look back on my newspaper career and I look back on my National Geographic career, I have very little photos of myself in the field. It never struck me in the most amazing places I've been in to take pictures of myself. It never crossed my mind. You know, and now with the new digital world that we live in, not only do photographers take pictures of themselves, but they have film crews with them. So, you know, the Geographic, you know, photographers, they go out there with film crews. It's just amazing to me when I see that, because I'm like, how can you actually get a true experience and connect with people if you have a film crew with you?
We see that.
So I don't know.
That's a really interesting point to me, because it used to be about, I think, very much with photography, and you come from an era, I suppose, at the tail end of that, it was about acceptance and gaining trust from people. And
exactly.
I guess that's much harder to do when you have a film crew and producers and runners and fixers running around with you.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I at least I think it is, you know, but, you know, again, you know, only time will tell.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.